There's still time to save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Create stunning patios and strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast with our easy-to-use design and buy program in-store or on Menards.com. Don't miss out. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, live and in color right here on Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM Channel 204, MSG Networks, and your streaming devices. Keith Irizarry betting around the rim. The crew is here. Chris and Sarah, Steve, and EJ doing their thing. Some of the behind-the-scenes work as well from John. My goodness, I can't believe we're in hour number two of the program, and we are an all-star weekend. But let's switch gears a little bit and get into the world of college hoops, because we've got some breaking news. John Rothstein, our buddy from CBS Sports, just tweeted this out maybe 10 minutes ago. We'll bring it in for a TV audience for you, and I'll read it for the radio audience. Oklahoma State's Cade Cunningham and Isaac are both out for today's game against West Virginia, per the head coach Mike Boynton. This was like 45 minutes, an hour ago, that we get this news. We knew we were going to dive into the world of college sports. And we've already seen this line shift from 7-point dogs against West Virginia to now 10-point dogs. And I know we'll talk about this game a little bit later in the program when Joe Lisi joins us, our Sports Grid college basketball insider is what we can call him. Love when we hang out with Mr. Lisi. I was so close last night. You know, you have those moments where like, oh man, you should have done this. I was going to put a bunch of money on West Virginia at -7, and I didn't. I didn't pull the trigger. Now it's at -10. Kicking myself. Hopefully all of you guys out there were kind of paying attention to all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, obviously this is a big loss without Cade and Isaac. And more notably, we pay attention to Cade because this is the guy that's going to be number one, number two, number three in the draft this upcoming year. He's a reason why major reason why Oklahoma State is top 20 in America. And assuming they're in the NCAA tournament, they are a team that no one's going to want to play. Like, if we look at Oklahoma State, are they an elite-level team? The answer is no. But do they have an elite-level player in Cade Cunningham? It's a resounding yes. And when you have that one player in the collegiate ranks for an NCAA tournament that on any given day can give you 30, can give you 40, you know that there's a chance you make a run. There is no reason to believe that Cade Cunningham and the Oklahoma State Cowboys, assuming Cade is healthy come tournament time, and assuming they're allowed to play in it, can't do what Davidson did with Steph Curry. Right? I mean, just dot the I's, cross the T's. It's very similar, except for the fact that Oklahoma State would be battle-tested playing in one of the top two conferences in America this year in the Big 12. All right, another team that, you know, last week I said had a chance to be a sleeper Final Four team. I'm not taking any broadcaster whammies on this one. This is not my fault. It crushed me to see this news. And another one of our buddies, Jeff Goodman, tweeted this out afterwards when it had happened. But Colin Gillespie, the dynamic guard for Villanova, is done with a torn MCL. This is absolutely brutal for this kid, and it crushes any chance of Villanova getting to the Final Four. He was everything for them. This was as per one of the other Big East head coaches talking about or texting about Colin Gillespie. Colin Gillespie, we talked about it right there and up against the clock. I mean, he's given you 15 points, 5 assists per game. He is a major reason why people, listen, Jeremiah Robinson Earl is probably the best player on that team. And we welcome in our radio audience here. I am Keith Irizarry. It is Betting Around the Rim. You're watching us on Sports Grid and MSG. You're hearing us on Sports Grid, Sirius XM, Channel 204, talking a little Villanova, talking a little college hoops. Yeah, I feel bad for Jay Wright. Feel bad for that school, but feel even worse for Colin Gillespie. Felt like this was a chance for them. And I know they've had some bugaboos on their season. They've had a few times where they laid eggs and there were games where like it's really scratch your head and trying to figure out like why were they not winning this game? I don't know. I had some good feelings for them. Now we got to move on. So let's move on to Michigan. And I know Michigan had a bad loss this week. They also had a nice win this week. And the Wolverines, who were picked to finish sixth in the Big Ten before the season. So if you cash in on them winning the Big Ten, congratulations to you. That was a good one. Michigan is your Big Ten champs. And Jace Howard is on the team. Juwan Howard is the head coach of that team. And Juwan Howard, well, he went dancing. Can we play this? Let's go. Can we roll this? Juwan Howard, dance for me. Hold on, TV audience. I'm dancing now, too. Yeah, we getting in there. Yes. Juwan Howard, good job there. I mean, listen, his dance moves were fine. He's a, you know, Fab Five historian. He's a Fab Five original member. We had Chris Webber on the program a couple of weeks ago. Love that. He's not surprised at how good Juwan Howard has been able to do in Michigan. He's not surprised by this Wolverines team. The world may be, but as you started seeing this Wolverines team get it going early on in the year, I'm not that shocked that they've done so well. Hunter Dickinson can flat out play. Franz Wagner can flat out play. You look at the rest of this guards. They're not great. They're really, really good. And they're seasoned. The Michigan Wolverines are a legit title contender. And if you love Michigan, you love hearing that. Guys, I love dunks. So I want to talk about all-time dunkers. Coming up next, Betting Around the Rim.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You know, we are back with you. It is Betting Around the Rim. I am Keith Irizarry on a March 6th, a Saturday edition of the show. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. The professor is in the house. It is time for a roll call. Let's go. Here we go. We're going to talk about the best dunkers of all time. And this one is my list. Two, the slam dunk competition is tomorrow. And the genesis of this list is because I want to talk about people that have been in an NBA dunk contest. So sorry, LeBron James cannot be on my list. Shaquille O'Neal is you know, one of the most dominating dunkers of all time. He cannot be on my list. And we can go on and on about some people that can't be on my list. I didn't put, and there are some people that are angry at me, Zach LaVine is not on the list. Aaron Gordon is not on the list. They're both awesome, but I did not put them on my personal all-time list. I got to start with Spud Webb. How about a guy that stands 5'7", and most people talked about his weight, you know, about 135 pounds. Spud Webb was doing things back in the 80s that we had never seen. Outduels Dominique Wilkins to win the 1986 dunk contest. We remember some. How about he had that two-handed double pump dunk, right? For my TV audience, you're kind of seeing me make some of these moves. I'm going to try to show you. He had that one where he lobbed it up to himself. So little double pump dunk right there. Spud Webb, he had the one where he threw it up in the air, went towards the rim, boom, dunked it home. He did a 180. I love it. I'm all in on Spud Webb. How about the only three-time winner? Nasty Nate. Nate Robinson, dude, had almost a 44-inch vertical jump. Nate Robinson is a slam dunk contest hero, legend. But Nate was catching dunks in games, too. And he's got a list of people that he ended up dunking on. Let's roll in our graphic here. Three-time dunk champion, 2006, 2009, and 2010. Some of these dunks in-game were filthy. Obviously, in 06, let's talk about the dunk contest in 06, the first one. He actually brought Spud Webb out because, you know, a lot of people equated them together. They're both short of stature. And he dunked over Spud Webb as a rookie. Had that dunk over James Posey. He once caught an alley-oop over basically everyone on Toronto in-game. I am all in on Nate Robinson. And Nate, I'm going to throw it out here. Hey, listen, you ever want to jump on the show with us? We would love to have you on Betting Around the Rim and chop it up. Number eight, we'll bring back up our list of the all-time dunkers. Number eight is Kobe Bryant. He won a dunk contest back in 1997. We looked up the vertical, the verts of everybody. I was surprised, and I want this to sound disparaging. I thought he would have been in the 40s, but a 38-inch vertical, which is good. Kobe was that dude that was handing out posters. Want to mention some names? He caught Yao. He caught Dwight Howard. He caught Steve Nash. I know we're on MSG. Let's go back to a game that he had at Madison Square Garden. Over Latrell Sprewell, caught like this windmill dunk where he came through, did a little spinny spin here, and then yammed it right there. We also had, do you remember that reverse dunk against Denver too, where he came through and then finished this way? TV audience, you're seeing me here? Oh, it was fantastic. Kobe Bryant, you are number eight on the list. Number seven, I got some pushback from my producer, Chris Kofsky, who thought that I was reaching on Blake Griffin here. But can we talk about what Blake Griffin did for the first 7-8 years of his career? Yes, he won a dunk contest, and that was, in 2011, he won the dunk contest. His vert's good. He jumped over a car, you know, did some cool things in the dunk contest. I don't even necessarily care so much about the dunk contest. It's what he did in-game. People talk about catching bodies, right? Like that's a phrase that's used on the streets when you're talking about dunking on people and putting people on posters and all those kind of things. In the early 2010s, you'd be hard-pressed to find just a better, more explosive, more vicious, more ferocious dunker than Blake Griffin. Roy Hibbert is what, 7'2"? He got him. Pau Gasol, 7 feet. Got him. But guess what? Got him twice in the same game. We remember that dunk where Blake kind of went up and almost threw it into the rim. Boom. It was like I'm here. Ah, boom. Big time dunk. Blake Griffin, you are on my list. Number six is T-Mac. Love me some Tracy McGrady. And if there was no Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady probably wins a dunk contest. Tracy McGrady made it cool to throw an alley-oop to yourself. He did it in an all-star game, did it in a regular season game. Tracy McGrady, another guy. We're going to talk about catching bodies. Do you guys remember Sean Bradley? 7'6". He was in the original Space Jam. That's all I'm going to say to you. Tracy McGrady yammed it on him. I mean, like, he just dunked it right on him. He lost that 2000 dunk contest to Vince Carter. Can't blame him for that one. Tracy McGrady, man, if he didn't end up with some of those leg injuries later on in his career, to think about what more he could have done, still a Hall of Famer and a Hall of Fame dunker that did not win a dunk contest, but was absolutely lights out awesome. Number five, it's Dr. J, it's Julius Erving. And I know that we never in the NBA got a chance to really see the real Dr. J because he spent so much of his time in the ABA. But he was in a dunk contest, which works. That's why he fits in. This one was in 1984, the inaugural one, the one that Larry Nance ended up outdueling him. He lost to him. Most of his dominating dunks were in the ABA. Go to YouTube and just type in Dr. J dunks. They're sick. But I guess the legendary one, the legendary dunk, and we talked about this, I think, 2-3 weeks ago when Anthony Edwards had his sick dunk, was the Rockabye, right? Where he came through the baseline, Michael Cooper, you see him kind of just jumping through the screen and dunk. So like Michael Cooper came this way, the dunk came this way, boom, and Michael Cooper is forever immortalized as a poster for Dr. J. All right, now we are up to our top four. Number four is another one that I'm getting pushback from people, and I don't care. You all are wrong because the Rain Man was making it rain inside. Oh my goodness. Now, the knock on him was that he was 6'10" and doing all these crazy dunks. And that's kind of why I think in the dunk contest, maybe it doesn't look as great. But he was in 4 dunk contests in his first 5 NBA seasons. Finished second, finished third. He was also, I mean, can we talk about the list? The Chris Gatling dunk? Okay. The Lister Blister, the Alton Lister dunk, where he dunked it on him, and then he pointed at him, and he smiled. He's like, ha-ha, got him. Oh, man, Sean Kemp. I know you didn't win a contest, but you are an all-time dunker. All right, let's go. Number three, maybe the greatest player that's ever done it, Michael Jordan, is not number one. I'm sorry. But he did win back-to-back contests, 1987, 88. He would fly through the air. We love it, but he's not number one. Number two is the guy that he went against in a lot of those contests, Dominique Wilkins, the dominance, the ferocious dunks, the two-handed dunks, the I'm going to take your soul, I'm going to take your heart with this dunk. In 1985, how about he beat Jordan, Dr. J, Larry Nance, Clyde Drexler, and Daryl Griffith, all about that physical dunk. Dominique Wilkins, yes, sir, the human highlight film, the human highlight reel. Dominique. But it is Vince's world. Vinsanity is over. The 2000 dunk contest, one of the greatest I ever seen, maybe the greatest show I have ever seen. Vince Carter was doing, I mean, he put his arm in the rim up to his elbow, dunked it in. Who does that? Like, I don't know if I can do that on a Nerf net. Vince Carter, kudos to you. You are the greatest dunker of all time as we get ready for the dunk contest. My next guest told me that he can still dunk. Joe Lisi is up next. Keep it here. Betting Around the Rim.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Radio Sirius XM Channel 204 MSG, all the streaming services. Joe Lisi joins us each and every week at this time. Go for the two on Twitter. And I talked about Joe and his dunking abilities. And if people don't know, he's got these superhuman jumping abilities. The vertical is ridiculous. And Joe, you've been dunking like since what? You're 7-8 years old? You've been dunking forever.
Inside the house, Keith, right? You talked about the Nerf hoop, right? I told you the story, right? Amazing. Back in the day, you know, we're talking Lou Carnesecca days, Walter Berry, Chris Mullen, you know, Willie Glass. I put my grandmother in front of the Nerf hoop. You know, she had to be in her 60s, and I'm dunking over her in my bedroom. Those are the extent of my dunking days as a youngster.
All right, I got to know though. Did grandma ever block the shot? That's what I want to know.
It was N1, Keith. N1. That's I had to put pillows around just in case I knocked her down. It was torture. The things that I did to my grandmother in terms of Nerf basketball were it can't even be brought on there. It's amazing.
Amazing though, and those are memories that'll last forever. Let's talk about some games. Let's dive into Oklahoma State. So no Cade Cunningham today. We kind of figure there's a chance he doesn't play. We got this Oklahoma State West Virginia game, which last night was at -7 for West Virginia. Now we have it at -10.
Yeah, this is one of the most intriguing lines, you know, with or without Cade Cunningham. Both teams have won 4 of the last 5, right? It's back-to-back road games for Oklahoma State. They did get the cover Thursday night against Baylor, lost that matchup by 11 as a 12-point underdog. But I still have to look to Oklahoma State here. You know, I think the money's going to come in on West Virginia. I think all things being equal with Miles McBride, West Virginia might win. But I'm still going to take the 10 points with Oklahoma State in this battle.
Would you have taken it when it was 7, though? Because I said I missed the boat. I saw it last night at 7. I meant to put money down on it. Honestly, life just got in my way and I didn't. What would you have felt at 7?
I still would have taken Oklahoma State. You know, I feel like both teams match up very well. And now that Cade Cunningham is not playing, it's going to be other players to step up and showcase their skills, right? This is a confident team in Oklahoma State. When you lose to top-ranked Baylor only by 11 points and we're in that ball game from start to finish, you have to feel confident going on the road against a solid West Virginia team. But like I said, West Virginia, I think, definitely wins this game. But Oklahoma State, I feel, covers the double-digit number today.
Joe, I don't have a lot to talk about with Florida State and Notre Dame, but I got one question for you because Kofsky, our producer, put this on Up Against the Clock. Will Florida State have higher than 80.5 points scored today? This is a team that's done 80 or more in 4 of their last 7 games. So do they get 81 today against Notre Dame?
I don't know if they do. I think Notre Dame, if they have any chance to win this game, they're going to have to slow it down, right? Florida State is more athletic. They're going to want to run up-tempo and run the floor. And if you're Notre Dame, if you get into that type of ball game, second half of Syracuse, you're going to get blown out in terms of that scenario. So they have to slow it down, play more half court. I'm not so sure in that type of situation Florida State gets to 80.5 in that ball game. But I do feel they clearly win against the Fighting Irish today.
Joe Lisi joining me, Betting Around the Rim, Keith Irizarry. We, each week, I feel like we find one game where there's one team that's clearly better than the other, but we find an angle. So Alabama, 8-point favorites against Georgia. Georgia, 6-3 over their last 9 against the spread. Any chance that Georgia keeps this close?
Yes, but I'm on the other side with Alabama, and I've been on Alabama all year to showcase and be a possible Elite Eight team in March Madness, right? Back-to-back games against Mississippi State and Auburn. They barely got the cover against Auburn Tuesday night. Now they go on the road to face a Georgia team that got blown out by South Carolina as a 5.5-point favorite. They lost the game by 21 points. I think this game is close early. It's back-to-back road games for Alabama. But for me right now, right here, I would back Alabama in a big way. This is one of my better bets for the weekend. I think the Crimson Tide need to showcase out. They need to start playing better, especially on the road. I think they do it against an athletic Georgia team, but I do feel they cover this number fairly easy today in Athens.
All right, mark it down. Alabama wins by more than 8. We continue rolling along with Joe Lisi. Probably the game of the day, we go to Ohio State and Illinois. Still don't know if Iowa's going to play for the Fighting Illini, but the Buckeyes, odd team, losers of 3 consecutive games, albeit all 3 of those losses are probably against NCAA tournament teams. Is something wrong with Ohio State?
No, I just think it's matchup problems, right? I thought that Luka Garza and Iowa matched up very well down low against a guard type of team, right? In Ohio State, as those guards go with Dwayne Washington, basically the success of Ohio State's offense. But, you know, they've had a week off. They lost those games by 8.3 points per game. Keith. And more importantly, even though Illinois got the dominating road win over Michigan, this is their third straight road game, in conference. I think that'll take its toll. I think Ohio State steps up, bounces back in a big way. I think they win this ballgame. Won't be easy, but I could see about a 5 or a 6 point win for the Ohio State Buckeyes today in Columbus.
Yeah, I was tempted to go with Illinois in this one, and I just can't see the Buckeyes losing 4 in a row, so I'm with you on that one with Ohio State. Indiana and Purdue. Purdue, one of those sneaky good teams that we didn't realize they were good at basketball, and now they're a top 25 team, and with some of their wins, clearly looks like they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. Anything spicy about this matchup?
You know what's interesting about this matchup is that Purdue has won 9 straight in the series by an average margin of victory of 9 points per game. This line opened up at 8.5. They actually bet it down right now on FanDuel at 6.5. I jumped on it at 7.5 last night. This Indiana team is like a helter-skelter type of team. You don't know what you're going to get, right? This is a rivalry game. I think Purdue does win, but I think Indiana covers the 6.5, 7-point number today. I don't see this game getting out of hand in double digits at home in West Lafayette for the Boilermakers today. I think they're going to be in a dogfight with the Hoosiers today.
I'm with you on that one as well. Colin Gillespie is done for the year, torn MCL. Obviously, a tough break for the kid, tough break for Villanova. I don't necessarily care as much about this match of Villanova and Providence. I think Villanova still wins this game even without Gillespie. But going forward now, how do you kind of handicap Villanova as an NCAA tournament team? They'll be in that field of 68, but how do you view them?
Yeah, I think that you really have to look at matchups, right? It's going to come down to, are they going to have that type of perimeter shooting without Gillespie in the lineup? I still think they can. Other playmakers can step up. And when you have Jay Wright, one of the best coaches in terms of college basketball, I think they're going to be there. Now, they're going to have to transform their style of play without their leader and point guard on the floor, but I still think that they can do it. Again, now, are they a Final Four contender without him in the lineup? I'm not so sure, but they can make a deep run, Elite Eight, possible, Final Four if they have a solid matchup. It really comes down to who do they match up well with and in terms of depth in the NCAA tournament.
Another weird team this year has been Virginia, number 21 in the land. They got a win the other day. They got a game against Louisville. On paper, they should win that game. And again, I'm going to ask it almost the same way and like how you view Virginia, because Virginia came in to this year, obviously, as the defending national champs from 2 seasons ago, but I'm really lukewarm on them now. I'm kind of cooling off now.
Yeah, I am too, and I think they actually lose this game against Louisville today. They're a 2.5 point favorite. I like the way the Cardinals are playing. A dominating road win over Duke last Saturday in overtime. They led from start to finish. I think the guard play is critical in terms of the Cardinals in this matchup going up against basically the zone defense of Virginia. But perimeter shooting for the Cavaliers, Keith, where is it? I know they're converting 49% in terms of field goal percentage, but in a big spot, have we seen this type of team nail threes like they have, a couple of years ago when they won the national championship? I think that's the biggest, change. They're getting high percentage shots, but they're all down low for the most part.
Michigan, they are your Big Ten champs. And my producer, Chris Kofsky, he found this video. I don't know if it was on Twitter or TikTok. So we're going to play you a video here because from what I heard, this is because of you. That's all I can say is I heard this was because of you. Roll it.
Love it. Suavemente. I love it, Keith. Back in the day.
Let's talk a little bit more about Michigan now. So Michigan, they're your Big Ten champs. Coming into the year, they were picked to be 6th in the Big Ten. Michigan, they had a loss this week. Baylor had a loss this week. Gonzaga still undefeated. Are they all still clearly the top 3 teams in America?
I think they are. They remind me of college football. When you see the elite programs, the Ohio States, the Clemson, the Alabama, I think that's what you have with Michigan, Baylor, and you have Gonzaga right now. I mean, in a big spot, in a big game, they step up, you know, and that's what you want. I think the only other team you could possibly mention, and I'm not sold on them, is Illinois, because I think they lose today in Columbus, but they're battle-tested, especially on the road.
Can I sell you on the fact that Gonzaga is clearly number one, though? Like, I know they're number one in the land, but I know that you keep telling me the other two to watch out for. I think Gonzaga, it's their season to lose.
I know, but they haven't done it before, Keith, right? We've seen them in this spot how many times, and they failed to come through. Until they do it, I can't buy in.
Over 90 points per game, less than 70 points per game, every game by double digits. I'm trying to sell Joe, but I can't get him. He's Joe Lisi. Watch him on In Game Live a little bit later. Today, it is Betting Around the Rim.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Worldwide, Wob, you know him, you love him, Sports Grid, FanDuel, he's all over the place, and he does his weekly spot with us now. The best team in the NBA. Let's start here. Let's make it the most difficult question I could possibly ask you. As we are at the All-Star break, who is the best team in the NBA?
Hate to admit it, it's probably the Brooklyn Nets. The Lakers are reigning champions. They're still the favorite. They're the reason why they're the favorite, but if you're asking me who the best team is as of this very moment, I just can't ever underestimate the firepower of that offense. And knowing that they're about to score big in either the trade or buyout market, they're just going to add to that depth. Do they have issues on the defensive side of the ball? Sure, but those are slowly getting better as we progress throughout the season. And when the game slows down in the playoffs into that half court type of pace, they're not giving up 130 points per game. You always end up with your stars, the ball's in your stars' hand with the game on the line. And the Brooklyn Nets got the three best in terms of putting that ball through the hoop in a high-pressure situations. So while I think the Clippers and the Lakers may ultimately be better in the long run, as of this very moment, I think your answer is the Brooklyn Nets.
And I'm with you on that one, too. I just find it hard to believe that someone could stop that trio. You mentioned the buyout market, and we know there's going to be a bunch of names out there. One is Blake Griffin, and I know Sham Sharania had it out there. The Nets are the leaders in the clubhouse right now. You believe he ends up in Brooklyn?
Yeah, that seems like a decent fit for him. I know if I'm acquiring Blake Griffin, I don't want him playing 30, 35 minutes a game and his usage rate being north of 20% anymore. He's just not that type of player. He hasn't dunked since 2019. And granted, dunking does not equate to being a good basketball player, but I think his days of high usage and being the star are over. That doesn't mean he can't not be effective. You know, guys have transitioned to the bullpen and made careers in there after being starters throughout their entire baseball career. So, Blake Griffin can certainly come off the bench for the Brooklyn Nets with somebody like Jeff Green and just cook with that second unit. It's going to be real hard for me to see him end up back in Los Angeles with the Clippers after what went down when they said, we're going to put your jersey in the rafters. The Clippers make a lot of sense because they do need a little bit of depth in that front court, but I just don't know how he signs there again after what went down during the trade to Detroit. So for me, I think Blake Griffin, it's going to come down to either the Brooklyn Nets, the Los Angeles Lakers, and you know what, I'll throw in a dark horse as the Miami Heat, but I do think the Miami Heat have their eyes on the main target, which is PJ Tucker.
Could I tempt you on the Phoenix Suns? And I don't know what the relationship is with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin anymore, but it just brought back, you know, them playing together.
For sure. The Phoenix Suns are playing great. They're playing awesome. I just personally, I don't trust DeAndre Ayton in the second round of the playoffs against either the Clippers or the Jazz or the Lakers or any of those teams. I need a little bit more experience, veteran experience out there. Chris Paul and Devin Booker are awesome, but if my main big guy that's playing 30, 35 minutes a game is DeAndre Ayton, he has a lot of potential. But if we're talking like, can the Suns get to the finals? They're going to need someone like a Blake Griffin to spell DeAndre Ayton in those big minutes. Just a personal opinion of mine.
Rob Perez Worldwide, WOB, joining me, Keith Irizarry, on Betting Around the Rim. The Utah Jazz lose 3 of 4 going into the break. And I talked about this a little bit in hour number one with Chris Miles from NBA TV. What do you think of that? Is that something that we go, okay, we have to pay attention to that, or just first half winding down?
It's a little bit of both. So I don't want to be swamped down by recency bias. Let's not forget that this team won 20 of 22 games and whatever it was. And 19 of those were by double digits. Just because they lost a couple games before the break should not distract us from the fact that that actually happened, which is a major deal. But those two losses were to really good teams. And the one that I'm looking at specifically was the Miami Heat game. And the reason why they lost those two games, right? I believe the other one was to the Clippers, LA team. The reason why they're losing these games was because they're not getting those wide open three-pointers that they enjoyed for the entire month of February before. They were getting run off the three-point line. Ingles, Bogdanovich, Royce O'Neal standing in the corner where these Jazz are setting NBA records for launching threes and making them, to their credit. I mean, it's incredibly efficient, and that's why they were blowing teams out. But when you play a defense as stout as the Miami Heat that came in there with a playoff-type game plan, Joe Ingles is going to have to beat us off the dribble. Royce O'Neal is going to have to beat us off the dribble. And they went back to looking like they did when they were the sixth seed last season, when you put the entire burden in the state of Utah on Donovan Mitchell's shoulders to go be Superman. That's ultimately what they forced him to do. It was a close game that they could have won, but when they get punched in the mouth, meaning when they don't get the wide open three-pointers, I think we see this team more for their true colors, what they're going to look like in the playoffs, because you're not getting 50 wide open threes in the playoffs. That's just the way it is. You're going to run into the Iguodalas on defense who's inside your shirt. Jimmy Butler was inside their shirts. Bam Adebayo had everybody locked up on that court, and that's just the Miami Heat. What happens when you run into a real top team tier team in their defense in the playoffs? We'll find out soon.
How hard is it for you to kind of navigate through the Western Conference? You look, all right, so we know the Jazz are upper echelon and the Lakers and Clippers clearly are, and the Suns are playing upper echelon. But then you got a team like Portland who has two of their starters injured still. You have a team like Denver that started slow because of, you know, maybe bubble effects. And then just some other teams, even like the Mavericks, playing better basketball now. How do you kind of like navigate through that Western Conference and pick the hierarchy?
Yeah, so for me, it's the Lakers, the Clippers, and then everybody else until further notice. I understand the Jazz and the Suns are at the top of the conference there in the standings. They're playing great regular season basketball, but I will go to my grave because I've been burned too many times in the past by this, and I will never be burned by it again. The NBA playoffs is a completely different sport than the regular season. So I do think some teams, for example, the Miami Heat, translate to playoff basketball better than some teams that are ahead of them in the standings. Now, when you have Chris Paul, who's arguably the best still to this day, the point guard, the best point guard in the league, the best floor general in the league, got a guy like Devin Booker alongside, you can't look past that. But the Lakers and Clippers are built for war. They have star power. They have defenses, which when they turn it on and they're healthy and they're full steam ahead, commence primary ignition, they're not losing 4 out of 7 times to either of those two teams just mentioned in the West. So for me, until it's proven in the playoffs against one of those two teams, you can't take anything away from them.
Let's go over to the East really fast before I transition us to the All-Star game and All-Star festivities. We both obviously love the Brooklyn Nets. We love the Philadelphia 76ers. Who's the third team in the East? Is it the Bucks? Is it the Celtics? Or is it the team you keep mentioning, the Miami Heat?
It's got to be the Bucks. It has to be. If you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, Drew Holiday, and Chris Middleton, in terms of scoring the basketball, you have to be at least the third best team. Surrounding those guys, you get into a little bit of trouble with the Connaughtons and the Bobby Portises and the DiVincenzos of the world. They've been playing well, but like if those three guys are operating at their full capacity, that should be the third best team in the East. But if they're not, you watch this Bucks team and they lose games like to the Thunder or something. You're just like, what team is this? Like, what is this, the same team that was setting historical efficiency records under Budenholzer just 2 years ago? It sure doesn't seem like it. But the Miami Heat, to me, are probably, if we're going to go to the playoffs, I'm not betting against those guys against any team in the East other than maybe the Brooklyn Nets, just because, again, how every single player on that roster down the stretch of games, how interchangeable They are. You can't run pick and roll against Miami Heat because they just switch everything and they don't lose anything about any, and there's no disadvantage anytime that they have to switch. And then on the offensive side, they got guys that have been in that bubble that just go through the grind, like the Jimmy Butlers, to just find the way to get you to the finish line. So I think the long-winded answer to your question is, I think on paper, the Milwaukee Bucks are probably third, but I am very bullish on those Miami Heat.
Yeah, I'm all in on the Bucks as well. And I think that the fact that they struggled a little bit when there was no Jrue Holiday shows how important Jrue Holiday is. And Giannis this past month in February has been back to MVP level Giannis. All right, let's go to the All-Star weekend, the All-Star festivities. Halftime first, the dunk contest. You excited about this? What's your level of excitement?
I'm certainly not excited, but I'm not going to bury it before I see it, because usually when you predict this All-Star contest is going to stink. Yeah, Cassius Stanley is going to pull out some, do a 720 in midair and do a somersault or something you would see out of the movies, and then it'll be something we talk about forever. But usually the All-Star dunk contest it's all about the energy, right? The crowd, the oohs, the ahs, the anticipation. You got Kenny Smith on the mic. That same sentiment's just not going to be there because there's no crowd. So I don't know how that's going to translate. This whole thing is about hype, and it's for the fans. It's an exhibition. So it better be one hell of a dunk from names that aren't brand names, put it that way, A-list names. They have a very tall mountain to climb.
I'm in on Cassius, by the way, the only guy that's got a better vertical than Zion Williamson at Duke. So Cassius is my pick. Three-point contest, to me, I think this could be the most exciting thing. You got some big names. I know Devin Booker's not going to be in it now because of Conley, but I'm all in. I want to see Steph Curry kind of win this one.
Yeah, so three-point contest, Steph Curry is going to be the overwhelming favorite. He's probably going to win. So, I mean, you have to be willing to – if there's a plus in front of his name, you're probably getting value, because we've seen Stephen Curry make a 105 straight three-pointers in an open gym. And in a three-point contest, because it is timed and you're taking so many shots, I usually personally lean towards players that don't have a huge windup with their shot, right? Because if you have a huge windup, you have to shoot a lot faster, and that may take you out of rhythm. An example of a player with a huge windup is somebody like a Michael Porter Jr. That feels like it takes 2 seconds, but it's a trebuchet, and it's wet every time. I don't want to take anything away from Michael Porter Jr. Steph Curry is very flat-footed. He just takes it and flicks it. That's why I think he translates well to the three-point contest. And because of that, you know what? Give me Mike Conley Jr., who is going to replace that Devin Booker. He's a huge long shot. It's a guy that really doesn't rely on his athleticism to make his jump shot, and he has been waiting for this moment for 14 years to be involved with All-Star Weekend. I personally think he's going to make the most of it. And if he catches fire, all it takes is just making a couple deep threes with the money ball, and then all of a sudden he's in the finals. So give me the long shot in Mike Conley Jr., just out of pure narrative.
And I think they should let him, you know, if he shoots it right-handed, he should get an extra point for it, because he's ambidextrous, can shoot it with both hands. As for the actual All-Star game, what are some of the names you're looking forward to seeing out there? Where's maybe some value for a potential MVP pick?
Well, the name I'm thinking first and foremost is Elam. And you're probably, if you're listening to this, you're like, what did he just say? Elam, E-L-A-M. There will be an Elam ending at the All-Star game, meaning this is not just fourth quarter where the timer runs out. It's a different scoring system, and it depends on how many points are scored and how many points are left, and you have to get to a certain magic number. So it is a different style of basketball in terms of like finishing up a game. But ultimately, the spread is 3.5. Team LeBron on paper is a lot better than Team Durant, mainly because Team Durant doesn't have their captain. Team Durant, Kevin Durant, will not be a part of that. I always look towards the MVP in these situations, or in these exhibitions. And to win the MVP in the All-Star game, you need ridiculous usage, and you need to get hot early. Because if you get hot early, everyone kind of looks to you like, all right, he's the guy that's going for MVP. Let's give him the ball. So I want guys that are going to be on the ball at all times. And for me, my two picks, unfortunately, one is a favorite. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had a devastating defeat in this exhibition last year. I think he'll look to make up for that while playing with LeBron James. And we know what Giannis does when there's no defense and they're not going to be forcing him to shoot jumpers. He's going to be getting to the rim at will. So give me Giannis Antetokounmpo to win MVP. And I'm also going to add Bradley Beal, the NBA's leading scorer. And if Team Durant ends up winning, I think he'll be the reason why. So you have Giannis and Beal.
I like it. A lot of big names there. Big name we didn't get a chance to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about him in the future. TJ McConnell had one of the best nights ever in NBA history. We love him. We love you too, Rob. Enjoy a little break, and we'll catch you next week. More next. Betting Around the Room.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
That's right. We are wrapping things up on a Saturday morning. Hope you guys are having a great day, and I hope we've provided you with some laughs, some entertainment, and made you a little bit smarter. All right, let's do some best bets because no NBA today. We got to go all college. I got two interesting ones that kind of caught my eye. USC to win and cover over UCLA. Now, USC is the better team. They beat UCLA back early in February pretty handily. Actually, an easy one. They played on February 6th, and USC won 66-48. And then look at that game because Evan Mobley had just 9 points. Since then, 8 more games. Evan Mobley has been double digits every single game. USC hit a little rough patch, bounced back, big win over Stanford 79-42 earlier this week. UCLA has lost 2 consecutive games to Colorado and to Oregon. The line at 1 is basically a pick 'em. So give me USC to beat UCLA in a rivalry game. Now let's get to a weird one. All right. You ready for this? Kansas State's not a good basketball team. Iowa State is a worse basketball team. Give me the Wildcats of Kansas State to win and to cover. I had them at 4.5 point favorites. K-State, they're going to win that. They're going to cover. How about the Cyclones? Listen, they try hard, but they've lost 16 games in a row, and they've, you know, just 2-20 on the season. Rasir Bolton, he's their leading scorer. He won't play, or at least it doesn't look like he's going to play. This feels like a Kansas State win. And I crunched some other numbers. So Iowa State is the 8th worst team in the nation in defensive rebounding. Kansas State is top 100 in offensive rebounding. That means second chance opportunities. All right, so there you go. Kansas State, they're the winners. They'll cover. USC, they'll win. They will cover. All-star festivities tomorrow. We are all fired up. Got a lot of things planned, including the Zary Awards. Oh, yeah, the Zary Awards. I also want to give an award to the best wife ever, Jody, my wife. It's her birthday today, so happy birthday to her. We will pandemic party the way that we can over the rest of this weekend. For the whole crew here, Chris, John, Sarah, Steve, EJ, remember, if you can't trust me, how can you trust yourself? I am Keith Irizarry.